Good morning. Today is Thursday, August the 10th. Joining us this morning is Humboldt County's very own district attorney, Maggie Fleming.
Good morning, Brian.
Howdy.
How are you?
Red, white, and blue. Coincidental,
yes,
or not?
Not.
Okay.
Oh, coincidental. I see what you're saying.
Not.
It's early.
Judge, can I change my response? Oh, okay.
So I've got this morning's quote.
Knock it out of the park.
Thank you. It's by Pearl S. Buck. Our society must make it right and possible for old people not to fear the young or be deserted by them. And I wanted to bring that quote because I wanted to talk to you about it. I have good news about a new process we're going through at the county trying to address the elder abuse that we have in our community.
How common is it, elder abuse?
It's very common, and unfortunately, it spans every type of crime.
How's it defined?
So it's someone who's elderly, and the age is simply the deciding factor. So it can be family who's abusing them. It can be stranger. It can be a care provider. It's just that idea that we recognize elders very much like the way children are situated, you know, are extremely vulnerable. Sometimes they're counting on other people to care for them or to provide for them. And they can be very seriously taken advantage of. They can be abused. They can have their entire life savings forfeited by this person who is misusing the funds rather than providing care for them. And then there they are, you know, with no way to recoup.
Sounds like frail, elderly. I mean, I don't want to throw a number down because Dad might be listening. 85 plus, 90 plus.
It's 65, but it's also an understanding that it's not that they have to be frail. So first of all, it's just a code section. So the idea is, if a father, you know, gets in a fight with his son, saying, you know, you have to move out, we don't want you here anymore and stuff, and the son assaults him, we could charge it assault the way we do everybody else, or we can charge it assault on an elderly person because the code defines it that way. So the father can be as strong as he was when he was 40 or 45. That's really not the defining factor. The idea is we as a society recognize affecting their life, affecting their safety, affecting their finances has a much more serious impact on someone of that age.
Fraud, yes, versus elder, or a fraud committed against an older person. Is that just like a compounding factor, kind of like you commit a crime with a gun?
That's right.
Okay,
right.
It's the crime plus gun.
Yes.
This is fraud, yeah, plus elder.
And then there are also sections that specifically, sort of like children, specifically provide. So if you have a duty of care and you're not providing the care, or you're placing them in a situation that could result in danger because of their age and your responsibility for them, those are specific codes. So it's not an enhancement on another type of crime. It's specifically addressing those problems.
Is this an area of specialization?
Yes.
Is it that
yes,
rampant?
Yes.
Throw a number out. If we have 100 elders in a population, how many do you think? 1-2%?
You know, I can't offer a percentage. I know when I did the conservatorship calendar, I was surprised at how many there were and how many were a very sound mind who just really didn't understand what was being done. You know, they weren't paying close attention to their finances or whatever, and they really had no idea.
Kind of like computers with me.
That's exactly
right. KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:19.
It's not the place they hope to be in spring training, but the San Francisco Giants have the rest of the summer to play, and they'll be bringing their exciting brand of ball to Kika, Thunder Country, 101.5 FM. They've got a lot of games left on the schedule against contending teams, and playing the role of spoiler is a definite possibility. Be tuned in for all the action, all season long. Brought to you on KINS in part by Angelo's Pizza, Wyckoff's Plumbing, Electrical, and Hardware, and Living Styles Furniture.
happening in KINS News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Maggie Fleming. Maggie, is elder abuse, when you're looking at whatever the situation as it manifests itself in front of you, how much is intent a factor in there? Is it intent versus ignorance? Intent versus bad timing? I mean, how do you determine whether or not the abuse component was an overt thought process by whoever the charged individual is?
So it really is the idea, you know, you question intent, but some of the code sections don't necessarily require a specific intent. It's the conduct. But we're seeking, you know, in any case that we charge, in addition to the fact that we have to be able to prove the charges beyond a reasonable doubt, we're seeking a just outcome. So when we're making a determination what the charges should be, we're considering all of those factors. So, for example, you do sometimes have the person who's working two jobs and is responsible to care for their elderly mom, and maybe, you know, they've had a few bad days and not been able to get home from work or whatever. That's not the type of case we would be involved in, or we would file criminal charges.
Well, let's say chronically it was there.
Chronically is a different problem. But
so
again,
the solution might be
getting them services.
Somebody popping in during the middle of the day and helping them out.
That's right. That's right.
Nothing more than that. No jail time or any. Let's just make it
So
correct.
Long as the elderly person wasn't suffering physical harm. So there's that duty of care where you've endangered them by not providing the level of care they need. And then there's the duty of care that results in physical or emotional or, you know, harm. That is something then we might look at differently.
That sounds parallel to child abuse.
It's identical. It's really, they line the code sections up.
Just kind of fill in the blank with one of the two options.
Exactly. And that's why it's so important. We've been meeting for some time, for as long as I was handling the child abuse services team and making, you know, helping set that up and everything, I was always back of my mind thinking this is the kind of thing we need to do for elders, because it's not just the codes parallel, it's that the problems of proof that we have are identical, and that are sometimes the person is being manipulated. Sometimes the person, because it's a family member, doesn't want to proceed in criminal justice. They've had sort of guilt put on them in spite of the fact they're the victim. Sometimes it's the situation where other family members are pressuring them because either it's personally embarrassing to the family, or because the family, you know, sort of wants to sweep it under the rug. So they suggest to this elderly person, maybe you're just forgetful. Maybe you didn't know you gave them that jewelry, or, you know, those sorts of problems that you see in those dynamics. So it literally is very, very similar to the problems we see with child abuse and also the problems we see with domestic violence. So a number of us have been meeting for some time trying to figure out a way to better address how these cases are being investigated so that we could be more proactive, help more people before the problem becomes too far gone, and in those cases where it's appropriate, be able to effectively prosecute the perpetrator.
When you're dealing with diminished mental capacity, I would think that's a whole different layer of challenge.
It is. And again, that's part of why we need specialized investigators working these cases. Because similarly to the child abuse services team, my goal ultimately would be that elders would be coming to that facility for their interviews. Because a forensic interviewer is who conducts those interviews. Someone who is not asking leading questions, someone who's not, you know, trying to do anything other than establish what is it this person, you know, may have had happened to them. But they are trained in looking at how to talk to someone in different age groups, in mental capacities, understanding sort of people's ability to perceive and understand when they're having a conversation, recognizing when someone's, you know, even if it's only been 10 or 15 minutes, too tired to keep answering questions, you need to take a break, you know, sort of those sorts of issues.
It's almost like geriatrics.
Yes.
In medicine.
Exactly.
Are there those people around?
So we have forensic interviewers trained for child abuse cases, and I think they'd be very qualified based upon that experience. But yes, there is additional training. There's an entire, not just in California, but nationwide, an entire program for those who are prosecuting, investigating, handling elder abuse cases, because they
kind of like a graduate program.
Right. It's just becoming more and more. I mean, obviously, as our population is getting older, it's a problem we're seeing more and more. And what was great was, based upon all these meetings we've had, we presented an appeal to the Board of Supervisors for some Measure Z funding, and we received funding to start the process to set up a multidisciplinary team made up of Adult Protective Services, the public guardian investigator who works at the public defender's office, who sees a number of these elderly cases, giving us a percentage of half-time investigator in the DA's office and a quarter-time prosecutor to just work these cases, and a coordinator. And that is a really critical piece, because the coordinator is the one who, when the cross reports come in, when APS says, hey, Joe Blow was caretaking this woman and some of her neighbors felt he was stealing from her or he was abusive, and maybe, you know, APS looks at it and the case is closed, or maybe the sheriff's office is involved and that case is closed. But then a coordinator is seeing, hey, look over here, the city of Eureka also had the same Joe Blow with a problem.
It's 8:30.
What could we do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Maggie Fleming, Humboldt County DA. Talk Shop presented by CDH Painting and by Redeck. Maggie, it's intriguing to me. You said that Measure Z monies provided a halftime position. During the break, you defined what halftime means. Because for me, it was confusing as all get out. My thought was, oh, you work mornings doing this. In the afternoons, you're doing something else. What happens if somebody comes in the afternoon and, oh, I'm sorry, you know, can you come back tomorrow? You kind of cleared that one up for me.
Right. So when we were talking about how we would apply for trying to get some assistance to create this unit, I said, you know, given that we're just starting, I can't ask, and I would not ask for a full-time position for this because we don't have a caseload yet. What we need to do is to really train people to evaluate these cases and then sort of handle the investigation. And just so we're clear, we are handling elder abuse cases now. I've got folks in the domestic violence unit who are, you know, got the training and the expertise to do that because some of it's DV. And then I also have those in the sexual assault unit for the times that the elders are being sexually abused. And
there's some overlaps, yeah, obviously.
And yeah, general felonies for those where we see the financial abuse. But what I think is really critical for the investigator and why I want someone to be doing that 50% of their time is because the concern is, just like in a lot of, say, the family situational violence, but a patrol officer maybe gets called because a neighbor has seen something they think is wrong or misbehavior.
Just a little goofy, yeah.
And so the officer goes to the door, knocks on the door, door is open, maybe grandma opens the door. And maybe it's her grandson. Maybe he's, you know, got a drug addiction issue or something, and he's stealing from her, and he's there. But the officer hasn't figured out yet who all the participants are, and grandson says, it's okay, Grandma, I'll take this. It's the police. I'll see what they need. Don't worry about it. You know, and so unbeknownst to everyone involved, you know, sort of we've been, you know, the situation is that it seems like everything's okay and it was a misunderstanding. Having specialized investigators are those who will recognize, you know, I really need to separate her. I need to talk to her alone. I need, and for example, the financial abuse situation, you'll have family members. We get them all the time calling because they're out of the area and they say, I'm really worried. We don't know what her financial situation is, but it seems like this person who's there is getting a lot of money for some reason. Can someone look into it? You know, and it's sort of like, wow, can we look into that? And what, again, we see is, you know, when you think about financial abuse, that could be four or five boxes of bank records. And ask, you know, people who are out trying to answer the calls that are robbery and burglary and everything else, just to have that time is really difficult. Versus having an investigator who's designated to sort of handle these cases along with law enforcement, you know, and the various agencies that have the jurisdiction for where the people live. It's that support. It's that, hey, we're here to help with search warrants, get this case moving, and really lock down the evidence and the information early on so that we can address it, hopefully head it off before either the elder is seriously harmed and including seriously harmed financially. I mean, I've seen people who have had those who they thought were close to them go through their life savings, and you cannot, you know, at 72 or 83 expect to recoup your nest egg that you spent 40 years working hard to build. So the sooner we can get in and try to address that, you know, the better off the elders and our community will be.
So full-time would be roughly 2,000 hours a year?
Yes.
So you got 1,000 hours now to
yes
play in the sandbox.
Right. And it's also the importance of having someone, you know, sort of that, when I was talking to the coordinator, the idea is if APS sees something and they're concerned, having someone they can call, you know, a DA investigator, someone who's assigned this, who specializes in this, so that they can talk to them from the social worker perspective, talking to the law enforcement perspective, you know, what do we have here? Because that's, again, you know, sort of talking about cross-reporting. I'm not sure if the community understands, but we all have our divisions, and everybody looks at cases, you know, from that perspective. And then whether or not maybe their division can provide any additional services. But if
the silo model.
The silo model. And the more that we all share information and work together to make sure, hey, did you know this guy who was, you know, supposedly providing services, he no longer works for this person, but I understand maybe he's moved over to Fortuna. You know, sort of making sure that we are all on the same page and trying to address those people who are taking very serious advantage of our elder vulnerable adults.
And moving from jurisdiction to jurisdiction.
Right.
If it's APD and then EPD and then Fortuna PD,
right,
they probably aren't communicating that
right
way.
Right.
You'd mentioned financial abuse.
Yes.
And people stealing antiques, jewelry, that kind
yes
of stuff. What are the common areas? You know, if there's a first layer of the most common forms of elder abuse. So if let's say if you're a son, daughter,
right,
the one out of the area, or you're a neighbor or a buddy, what do we look for if it's in that arena? Yeah, the physical is a different ballgame, obviously, but what do we look for? What are the signs? You know, if something feels funny about, like if the pantry's always full, yeah, because you cook together, and all of a sudden, for the last 6 months, it's been bare bones. Well, that's not the kids coming to town for a weekend, something has changed.
Right.
Do you follow that?
Yeah. So ideally, elders do have somebody in their life that they trust. And I know that there's even individuals who will assist, you know, sort of be your financial administrator. And the idea is that someone else who's helping you keep track. You know, and this is what's so sad is, in the vast majority of families, families take care of it, and there's no problem. You know, my family is, my dad got older, even though he was very sharp, he still wanted to make sure one of my brothers was on the account with him just to
just in case.
Just in case. And just, you know, just to keep an eye on it, you know, and things like that. But there are, unfortunately, those situations where it is family members. So I think what's interesting is, talking about the layers, what you have to understand is, I don't know the breadth of it. I only know what gets reported. What I see getting reported a lot of time is family, because there is another family member who goes, this is really odd. Why would mom give my brother the brand new car she just bought? She told me she needed a car. Why does he now have it? You know, these sorts of things. And it's not, you know, some people go, it just sounds like family jealousy or whatever. But it's somebody who says, I don't need the money, but I'm curious how this happened and I'm worried, you know. And so, and that sort of opens the door at least to having a conversation and saying, how's everything going and what's going on, you know. And some people will frankly say, it's none of your business. You know, we have that too. A lot of people say, I don't know why anyone's questioning me. But it is always understanding, we don't want to get involved in people's personal lives, and it's not our say on how an elder wants to spend their money or anything. Having said that, if they're being taken advantage of, that's criminal conduct.
That gets back to the intent.
Yes.
KINS, News and Information Times, 844. We'll be back with more from Maggie Fleming.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
TheShoppingShow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time is 8:48. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Maggie Fleming. Maggie, with elder abuse, what is the role of the public guardian? Are they in there somewhere, or is that for different areas?
So the public guardian is a county department that handles those who need someone to basically oversee their needs, financial, their housing, making sure services are being provided to them. So many of them are elders. Many of them are not elders. They're just people who have sometimes mental health issues such that they really, you know, can't function solely by themselves in the world, but maybe can do very well living independently with that sort of help from oversight. So the public defender's office represents the person going through the process, and there's an investigator there who is also someone who sees, you know, the situation. And so it's very important to have that part of this multidisciplinary team, because they're also witnessing some of those concerns we have. The last part of it, too, that I forgot to mention earlier is that sometimes our reports come from the medical doctors. We get a lot of people in the ER, medical doctors who maybe have seen, you know, this elder for decades and now is noticing some pretty serious changes in their health, in their, you know, physically, some of the signs of abuse. And so they report. So those are another critical way for us to, again, work together, cross-reporting to make sure we're helping those people as soon as we can.
Thanks for coming by.
Thank you, Brian.
See everybody tomorrow.